If you got your Bibles, you can turn over to the 38th chapter of the book of Genesis. Tonight, this finishes up the book of Genesis. I want to try tonight, if I can, to go through this and see if we can finish up the book of Genesis tonight. Now, night before last, we had Adam and Noah. And then last night, we had Abraham and Isaac. And tonight, we've got Jacob and Joseph. Now, I hope maybe tomorrow we'll get into Moses and Joshua. And then maybe next time we'll get into, Moses and Joshua. And then after that, Samuel and Saul. And then after that, David and Solomon. And then after that, Daniel and Nehemiah. That'll just about take us through the Old Testament. But if we can kind of run these things together, I think maybe by the help of the Lord we'll be getting along all right. Last night was pretty lengthy. I wonder how many of you remember something from last night. Do you remember anything that we taught last night that was outstanding in the lesson? Was there any particular thing that was outstanding to anybody that they remember last night? All right. I asked a question or two last night to see if anybody was listening to the previous lesson. I'm going to ask a question tonight. When Abraham's bondsmaid, Hagar, left Abraham and she was with child, and she left Abraham, not with child, but this is when she had her son. She had her son with her, maybe 13, 14, 15 years old. Had her son with her, and she left Abraham. Where did she go? What wilderness was it? Somebody tell me, where was it? Somebody tell me. And she did go to Beah. She did go to Beah Haleroi, which was at the first. But now, where did she go? Huh? But the wilderness. What was the wilderness called? I think if you check, you'll find it was the wilderness of Beersheba. I think that's where you find that it was. And sure is right. In other words, she was over there. There was a place of Beah and Kadesh. And there was a place called Shur and a place called Gerar. We talked last night in that she left twice. She despised her mistress after her conception. She left. She despised her mistress because she was having children and Sarai could not have children. And therefore she despised her mistress. And the Bible said that Sarah tried to blame Abraham with it. And then finally, Abraham said, well, she's your bondsmaid. You do whatever you will. Now, some of you don't know what a bondsmaid was for, I'm sure. But back in that day, when a woman left home, she was given a bondsmaid or she was given a nurse. And this, of course, was according to what the Lord revealed to me and made me to understand, this was for the purpose of the midwife office. In other words, there was no one to deliver the children in that day, so they were given a nurse. Now, usually it wound up that the man to whom the woman was married, usually they wound up marrying the nurses, and they usually had three or four wives. So, in this case, Abraham married Hagar, and she became his wife, which was the perfect plan of God right down the line. It was God's plan. All the way down, even when Jacob married Bilhah and Zilpah, it was still the plan of God. All the way down. So we see that the Lord blessed both and made a great nation out of both of them. All right, now then, we want to start tonight. Remember last night we got over as far as Bethel. And here, Rachel, they were on their way over to Ephraim. And while they were on their way to Ephraim, before they ever got to Ephraim, the Bible said that Rachel died in the way. Between Bethel and Ephraim, she died in the way, and there Jacob buried her, and there was a stone placed over her grave, a pillar, which is there until this day. If we could go see Rachel's grave, and they've got it over in the Holy Land, we'd find out that the same stone that Jacob placed there is probably there today. Those things become kind of sacred. And now, something that I'd like to point out a little later on in the lesson, if I can think of it, the Lord quickens it to me, I'd love to especially point it out concerning Rachel and Leah, but not right now. Now, the Bible teaches that at this time that they were on their way to Hebron. Now, Hebron was where Abraham had dwelt, and the Bible said that Isaac dwelt by Lahairoi, and over there where he met Rebekah after his mother's death and married her. And then we find that Jacob, after going through all the trouble that he went through with, and the Bible speaks of the time of Jacob's trouble. Now, I hope you'll listen to this lesson tonight. You've already listened to some of it concerning Isaac, and we brought in some of it concerning Jacob last night. And he already had some trouble. But I especially want you to listen to it because we're teaching these lessons for the sake of revelation. And the Bible speaks of the time of Jacob's trouble, which is when the Jews come in over yonder under the powers of Antichrist. And so then the time of Jacob's trouble, it was a type of what's going to happen to the 12 tribes, which is the Jews, because his name was changed from Jacob to Israel. Now, who can tell me where his name was changed then? Brother Peniel, that's right. Last night, Peniel, just before he crossed the brook, he let the others cross over. He stayed and wrestled all night long with the angel, and his name was changed to Israel. Now then, when was he reminded of that change of name again? Can somebody tell me? The Lord reminded him of this change again. Remember after he went over there in Hamor? You remember what happened in Dinah? What happened to Dinah the sister, and then the brethren killed out the people of the city, and then you remember later on the Lord said, go back to Bethel. Go back to Bethel. All right, now you remember he called this the house of God. That's where he saw the ladder going up to heaven. We brought it out last night, the ladder going to heaven, and he said, this is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate to heaven. So it was more to it than you think, because at this certain place was where Bethlehem come up. Somewhere out there, it's called the House of Bread, where Rachel was. All right, now then, it's not coincidental that we're over here near Bethlehem, is it? Not coincidental that right down the road, I believe here, they call it Bethel. And out of this place, seven governors was up there where Brother Gene lives. There's seven governors back up there that resided in that place. And not only that, the Bible said, out of these shall come forth a governor. And of all places to be, is to be at Breedlove's Farm. So, all right, now then, let's say that he went back to Bethel, and he put up an altar, and the altar was called El Bethel. That's what he called it, El Bethel. And then on the way toward Ephraim, the Bible said that Rachel died in the way, and he buried her there. And then he continued on his journey, and he went on up to Hebron. And I want you to really remember this, because Hebron, remember, if you live over here in a certain place, you might say to you that you're a Monroeite, or you are a Covenantite, or, well, here they called them Hebrews because they went to Hebron. From Hebron, this is where they get their name, Hebrew. And so then after this, they begin to be called Hebrews. Like Jesus, he went down to Nazareth, and they called him a Nazarite. And so then, I guess you could call Brother Isle a Texasite, couldn't you? God, I don't know. He's kind of like Abraham. I'd have to place him. You know, he's been in so many different places. But anyway, here we find that Rachel died in the way, and then they went to Hebron, and here they begin to call them Hebrews. All right? Now, after this, remember, Rachel was dead. Rachel was dead. And after this, we go on, and we find that Jacob, with his children. Remember, his name was changed to Israel. And Jacob with his children, Jacob with his sons, continued on. They buried Isaac here at Hebron. Isaac died, and here they buried him over at Hebron. Who remembers his age? We brought out his age last night. He outlived his dad, Abraham. What was his age? 180 years old. All right, now, we'll say this much about Jacob. Jacob didn't live this long. Jacob just lived to be 147 years old. And Isaac, so then he didn't live as long as his dad. Isaac outlived his dad, but Jacob didn't live as long as his dad. We'll give you these ages to begin with here. While they come to my heart and mind, Jacob died at 147 years old after spending 14 years down in Egypt with his son Joseph. And Joseph continued on until Joseph was 110 years old, and then he died. Now, he died at 110 years old. Joseph died at 110, and Jacob at 147. Joseph was 30 years old when he began to rule down in Egypt. Now, you can see that pattern of Christ coming right in there. We'll say this because tomorrow we may forget this, and we'll mention it tonight. Ammon, the father of Moses, whose mother was a Levite, Ammon was 137 years old at his death. In case you want to put it down, we'll get over to Moses and remember this in case we don't bring it out tomorrow, we forget about it. Moses and Aaron. Moses was 80 years old when he went to deliver the children, and Aaron was 83 years old. He was just 3 years older than Moses. All right, now, that goes in the lesson for tomorrow, but I just thought I'd mention them tonight because there's so much to cover tomorrow that we may forget some of those things, and I'd like for you to have those things. I feel like they're important in kind of keeping up with the lineage. This way you can kind of keep up with it. All right, now then, remember that Jacob, he took his sons and they become herdsmen and they tended cattle. And during the time of Isaac, last night I didn't mention it, but during the time of Isaac there was a great famine in the land of Canaan just as it was in the days of his father. There was a great famine. Always seemed to be a famine in the land of Canaan during that time. Well, it was God's way of turning everybody down to Egypt because he had said that the seed would sojourn in bondage 400 years. And then after this, God would bring them out with a mighty hand. You remember that. He was to bring them out with a mighty hand. And then when he returned them to Canaan, the Bible said the land would flow with milk and honey. It would be a great land, a large land that would flow with milk and honey. And he was to bring them out in the end time after 400 years. After 400 years of being terribly afflicted and entreated mean down in Egypt, he was going to deliver them and bring them back to their land after the iniquity of the Amorites was full. And he told him in the vision that you recorded last night. It's on tape. You can play it back. How we explained the vision last night, how that he said that when the iniquity of the Amorites is full in the fourth generation, I will bring them back into the land of Canaan. Now he said, but the iniquity of the Amorites at that time will be full. And he said, I'll bring them out with a great judgment. He wasn't just going to bring them out, but he was going to leave a mark in Egypt that would last from now, from that time until his coming to rapture the church, that they would know that he was the God of all the earth. He said, for this reason, Pharaoh, have I raised you up. That's what he told Pharaoh. Send him word. Told him himself. And Paul repeats it in the New Testament. All right, now then, here's Jacob. And the Bible said that at this time, Joseph began to grow. And we start off here over in Hebron. And the Bible said that his brethren was keeping the flocks over here, over in Shechem. And Jacob said to Joseph, said, Joseph, go over there to Shechem where your brothers are, and said, bring me a report of them and see how they're doing. Well, he went over there to bring a report back. When he got over there, he couldn't find them, and so he met a man over there, and the man saw him wandering in the field, and the man said, who are you looking for, or what are you doing over here? And he said, I'm seeking my brethren who keep the flocks. And he said that your brethren have moved on over to a place called Dothan. And so then Joseph went after him. Now Joseph was a dreamer, and his dreams always seemed to lift him up. His dreams always seemed to lift him up. He was apparently a good man, but his dreams seemed to lift him up. And so then in his dreams, he had had a number of dreams, and his brethren resented the dreams. And so then they come against Joseph, and they said things mean against Joseph, and they plotted against Joseph to kill Joseph or to destroy Joseph. Now Joseph couldn't help his dreams, and you'll find out later that God is in dreams. But at any rate here, when they saw Joseph coming, they said, here comes that dreamer. Said, we'll kill that dreamer. We'll do away with it. I don't know who made that statement, but I just imagine it might have been Simeon. I can't say, but from what happened to Simeon a little bit later, it might have been him, because he and Levi was the ones that brought that conspiracy against the others, you know, down there against Hamor and them, and went down there and destroyed those folks. So I know when Jacob pronounced the blessing upon him, he said, these are instruments of cruelty. Now, you wonder how that could be when the Bible said that the priest came from the tribes of Levi, and yet they were called instruments of cruelty. But if you look at some of our priesthood of today, you can kind of understand what kind of priesthood we got today. And I think you could pretty well say some of them are the instruments of cruelty, the way they take advantage of people. But here, this Joseph that we're speaking of now, if you'll notice, this Joseph went over to his brethren. He had had a dream, and he told the brethren, he said, I dream. And said, in the dream, we were in the field gathering sheaves. And there's a lot of revelation in these two dreams. We have broke them down in Revelation, and I really love to get into them. But the natural part of it, Joseph said, I had a dream, and said, in this dream, said, I looked, and said, we were gathering sheaves. Now, you ever heard that song, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves. Well, they were gathering sheaves, or gathering the goods out of the field. And the Bible said that Joseph's sheaves stood upright, and when it stood upright, then the brethren, their sheaves done obeisance unto it, and they knelt down before it. Well, this upset the brethren. This really upset them. So then Joseph, he had another dream. And then this next dream, he said he had a dream, and he looked, and said the moon and the stars, 11 stars, and the moon and sun done obeisance unto him. So then this caused his daddy to rebuke him. His daddy rebuked him, but he pondered these things in his heart. He said, shall I surely come to bow down to you? I, your mother, and the brethren, shall they come to bow down to you? And so he pondered these things in the heart. Well, it was when Joseph was over here, over in Dothan, that they conspired against him. And the Bible said that when they conspired against him, one of them said, let's kill this dreamer, and then we'll see what becomes of his dream. So you could tell it was that same spirit of Cain, Brother Tom, that had done away with Abel. It was that same spirit that come over through the flood there with Ham. It had come right on down. As I've heard Brother Branham express, the seed of the serpent, it was the very same power coming right on down. And here is a conspiracy against Joseph, who is God's man of the hour. Now, so then we find that the same thing, wherever God's man of the hour is, there's always a conspiracy against him, and always trouble from the brethren. There's always a spirit of jealousy working, and the Bible said it's as cruel as the grave, and indeed it is, for soon, at one time or another, it causes you to kill if you go far enough. And many people killed because of jealousy. Now, so then they had their conspiracy here, and one of them said, let's kill him. Well, Reuben, he was kind of responsible, you know, he was the elder, and Reuben, he began to try to figure out how to get the boy out of their power, and how he could get him back home, so he said, let's don't kill him, said, let's just throw him in a pit over here. And so then they decided they'd throw him in the pit. Well, Reuben, he thought he'd go back and get him later, but God had other plans. It was God's plan for them to conspire against him the way that they did to show what was to go on. Now, I'm just going to drop this in, and you can pick it up later, or you can think on it a little now. Remember, Jesus' brethren conspired against him. That's what took him to the cross. All right, so then you see here, we find the pit and all these other things that we can't bring out tonight, but here we find these things, and Joseph over here, the conspiracy against him had brought him down to the pit, and here he was in the pit. Now, he was in the pit. Joseph needed a little rebuke. I think he could use a little rebuke for some of the things, you know, that happened. But anyway, here he was down in the pit. Now, we find that while he was here, Judah said, let us not kill him, but said, let us just sell him. Said, we sell him into bondage. There was some Ishmaelites that come along and said, we'll just sell him to the Ishmaelites then his blood won't be on us. But the Bible said the time the Ishmaelites come along, then some Mennonites come along. So the Mennonites got him, drawed him up and sold him to the Ishmaelites. And they took him on down into Egypt. They were bearing bombs and spices and so forth going down. And they took him down. Now, I don't know why the Bible says that the Mennonites sold him down when they got down there, but it does. But according to the Bible in the early part, it was the way I just related it to you. And so then the Bible says that they took him, and when Reuben and them came to look for the child, he was all upset and he didn't know what had happened. Now remember, Joseph was the young son of his father, and the Bible said he loved this young son. He really loved him. He didn't have but two children by Rachel, and now Rachel was dead, and all he had was Joseph and Benjamin left. And the Bible said that he took Joseph, and he made Joseph a coat of many colors, and that coat of many colors really tells a spiritual story. But the coat of many colors, no doubt in the days of Joseph, when Joseph made this coat, he was a man just like you and I, making his son a coat, probably when he lay down in his grave, even at the time of his old age, just before he lay down in the grave, even till that time, I don't believe he knew a thing about what that coat was to be, why he had made that coat or anything. He had just made a coat for his son. But anyway, that coat of many colors he made, and they took the coat. The Bible said when they took the coat, Reuben saw that the child was gone. He didn't know how to answer to his father. He took the coat. They must have killed a kid, or they killed something and put blood over the coat. And then the coat was taken back to the father. And when it went back, Reuben and them said, do you know this coat? Do you recognize it? And Jacob said, this is my son Joseph's coat. And no doubt he's rent into pieces by a beast. By some beast that Joseph has rent into pieces. So he began to weep and mourn. And the Bible said there was no way to console him, no way to comfort him. The daughters tried to and the sons tried to, but he would not be comforted. He said, I'll go down to the grave mourning for Joseph. And so then he continued on, the Bible said, and then there came a famine even in Jacob's time. A famine began to hit in Jacob's time. But during this time that he was mourning for Joseph, things was really taking place with Joseph down in Egypt. He'd been sold to Potiphar, and so then here he had put him over everything that he had down there, and God was blessing it, and the man had great riches, and God kept blessing it, and he didn't know anything that he had under his hand in the sense that Joseph looked after everything. And so then the Bible said that as Joseph went in and out the house to carry on his daily business, that the wife of this man came and laid hold on Joseph and said, as according to the scriptures, lay with me. And he refused to do it. He said, I'll not commit such an evil thing, seeing that the man has trusted me with everything and hasn't withheld but one thing from me, that's his wife. And said, I'll not commit this awful crime. And so then she pestered Joseph until one day when she found out that Joseph would not commit harlotry with her or stoop to her evil, idolatrous ways. Then, according to the Bible, she grabbed Joseph's clothes, trying to force him into something. And when Joseph, being a person of integrity, he rent himself from his clothes and left the clothes in her hand and left the house and fled. And she was so angry because he would not stoop to her evil that she told the servants and told the ruler of the house, said that this man, the Hebrew that you've got here that come in, said he come in to mock me. And she began to relate to him the things that had taken place falsely. And so he was very wroth after he'd been so kind to Joseph to think that Joseph had betrayed him. And the Bible said he put him in ward. But everywhere he went, God was with him. And so down him the ward, then here the man put him over everything here in the prison. And still he didn't have any hard way to go in the sense that the man put him over everything. For 2 whole years, as far as we can tell, he was down there in that prison. Now, but here's the thing. While he was down there in the prison, the Bible said Pharaoh was wroth with his butler and with his baker, his chief butler and baker, he was wroth with them. He put them in ward, and Joseph had to serve them. One morning when Joseph went around into the prison, the Bible said that as he went around there into the look into the prisons, that he saw their countenance was fallen, and he said, "Why are you so sad?" And so then the butler said, "Joseph, I had a dream," and said, "I don't know how to interpret it." And Joseph said, "Doth not interpretations belong to God?" Remember, he was a dreamer. And he said, "Doth not interpretations belong to God?" And so then the Bible said the butler told him the dream, and he said, "Joseph, that I dreamed of a vine." And said the vine came up, and said out of the vine there came forth three branches. On the branches he spoke of the buds, and he spoke of the grapes that come out on the branches. And said, "I took these grapes from the branches, and I squeezed them into a cup and delivered them into Pharaoh's hand." Now, there's a lot of revelation in that also. And then when he began to interpret the dream, he said that the branches are yet 3 days, and Pharaoh will lift you up, restore you to your proper place, and you shall again do service unto Pharaoh. Well, when the baker saw this, the baker turned and said, "Well, the interpretation is good, so I'll get him to interpret my dream." He said, "Joseph, I also dreamed, and over my head was three white baskets, and in the uppermost basket was all kind of fine meats that was for Pharaoh." He said, "And I saw the birds come and take this meat out of the basket and eat it from the basket that was on my head." Joseph said, "This is the interpretation of the dream. Within 3 days, Pharaoh shall lift thee up, and he'll prepare a feast and so forth, and he shall hang thee on a tree. And the bird shall eat the flesh off of your bones." And so it was, just as Joseph had said, it came to pass within the 3 days. He'd done just exactly that. He restored the butler back to his proper place of service, and also he hanged the baker on a tree. But at the same time, you remember, Joseph said, "When it is well with you, remember me." Well, the Bible said that even though it went well with the butler, he forgot. And 2 whole years passed by, and the Bible said Pharaoh had a dream. And when Pharaoh had the dream, the Bible said that he dreamed, and here by the river there was 7 kine came up out of the river, fat flesh and looked healthy and looked well. Then he said, later he looked, and here come up 7 lean flesh kine, he said, worse than he ever seen. He said, "I've never seen any in Egypt." He told Joseph when he explained the dreams that, "I never seen any in all of Egypt as thin as these, that looked as bad as these." He said, "Then I had another dream," and said, "In this dream," he said, "I also dreamed that there was a stalk of corn that came up," and said, "On this stalk there was 7 ears that was rank and good, full ears." Said, "Then I looked and said, here come up a stalk with 7 ears that was blasted by the east wind." And the Bible said that when he called for the magicians and all of the wise men, they couldn't explain it. And so then the butler, he come before him and he said, "This day I do remember my fault." Now, he said that there was a man year back a while ago, he said, that was in war down in the prison, and said, "I was down there with him," and said, "I had a dream." Said, "You had been wroth and you delivered us to the prison, and I'd had a dream, and a baker had had a dream," and said, "This man gave us the interpretation, and it came to pass just exactly like he said." And he said, "The man you hang of the baker and me you delivered back to my post of duty," and said, "This man was the man that gave us the interpretation." So then the Bible said Pharaoh called for Joseph. Joseph, he changed his raiment, he shaved and cleaned up and got ready and went up before Pharaoh. And the Bible says that when he went up here before Pharaoh, he stood here before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh told him of the dream. And Joseph, he said, "Joseph, there's nobody in Egypt that can interpret it." And so then Joseph said, "The Lord will give Pharaoh a satisfaction over this thing." And so then he began to interpret, and he told him, he said, "It means that there's going to be 7 years of plenty," and said, "There'll be just an awful lot that will come up this 7 years, an outstanding plenty." He said, "And then there will be 7 years of famine." And he said, "The famine will be so bad that the 7 years of plenty won't even be remembered because of the 7 years of famine." And he said, Pharaoh said, inasmuch as you dreamed this twice, remember in the Old Testament they taught in the mouth of two or three witnesses, and so he said, inasmuch as you dreamed this twice, God has established the thing and shall shortly bring it to pass. And so then here in this dream of plenty and the famine, the Bible said that Joseph found favor through the interpretation of it with Pharaoh. And as he found favor here, now he said to Pharaoh, he said, Pharaoh, let me tell you what to do. He said, take, and he said, during the 7 years that's coming, said, God is showing you what he's going to do. And said, during the 7 years of plenty that's coming, he said, you plant in all the coast. And he said, take a fifth part of it and store it away and put it away. He said, just keep storing up. And he said, then in the time of the 7 years of famine, he said, you'll save Egypt. And so he said, pick you out a wise man, Pharaoh, and set him over this. And Pharaoh said, well, who could I find that's wiser than you, Joseph? And he called the people together and he said, here's a man that has God within him, and he has understanding of dreams and these kind of things, and said, who could we find that's wiser than Joseph to put over this and let him be ruler? And so then the people agreed, and Joseph became ruler, and the Bible said he was made governor over Egypt. And there was nothing that was not under the hands of Joseph. Everything was under the hands of Joseph. There was nothing that was not under his hand. The only place that Pharaoh was greater was in the throne. He even gave Joseph his signet. And they took his signet, and when they put him in a chariot and he would go down the street, everybody would have to cry, bow the knees to Joseph. And so then we see here that God raised Joseph up, and though the evil come upon him, yet he finds himself down here after a few years. Now God scourgeth every son that cometh to him to see if he's following for the fishes and loaves. Nobody don't get by the whipping post with God. Everyone that comes has to go through the scourging. And sometimes it's not two or three days, it's a number of years. And so Jesus himself, the Bible said, though he were a son, yet learned the obedience by the things that he suffered. So then we see here in the natural life of Joseph that he became the ruler down in Egypt. Now, if you'll notice at this time, the famine, shortly after this, began to be great throughout all the coast, everywhere. And all the places got into a famine, including Egypt. And there was no food anywhere in any of the provinces except right there in Egypt. Joseph, for them 7 years of plenty that he ruled, he planted throughout all the coast, and he took a fifth part of it, and he numbered so much, the Bible said he finally just left off numbering. In all the cities, he laid up the corn and all of the stuff getting ready for the famine, and he had a tremendous amount of stuff when the years of the famine came. He believed God, and so then he laid up for the famine. Now, you've heard it said, go to the ant, ye sluggard, consider his ways and be wise. He gathers his food in the summer for the winter and so forth. Well, here's a good picture of it where Joseph is doing that very thing only on the strength of God's word. Now, I believe that in these lessons that we're really getting something in this sense that we see that Noah built an ark to the saving of his house, his family, just on the strength of God's word. And now we see Joseph laying up here. Now, you couldn't imagine somebody being a king in our day. Say the president up here. The president have a dream, and we go up there and give him some kind of interpretation. You couldn't imagine him taking us and making us a ruler over all the United States, could you? See, but just on the strength of a dream, this is to let us know how important dreams are and how important spiritual things are to us. Now, among us, we get a dream and God speaks to us and somebody treats it like it wasn't anything at all. Somebody just mocks it and passes it on. I know there's filthy dreamers. I know there's some people that don't never dream nothing but something filthy. I know the Bible speaks of dreamers that try to tear down the kingdom of God. But at the same time, there's dreams of God. There's visions of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, if you notice, the dream that Joseph had did not hinder the kingdom of God. Neither did it injure in any way nor try to tear down the kingdom of God. Everything that he dreamed was... Now, some of the people didn't like it. Some of the people didn't like it. And usually a dream from God or a prophecy from God or something from the Lord, the people don't like it. So then you see that these dreams furthered the kingdom of God and was always for the people's benefit to preserve the people. It never caused confusion. Now, the only confusion that was caused by it was the brethren rising up because of jealousy. There was really no confusion in it because it was the hand of God, as you'll see a little later. But anyway, now then we find him in rule, and here 7 years of famine sets in after that he has had this great time of plenty. Pharaoh had taken him to the rulership and put everything under him and had given him a wife over there of one of the priests, and the wife had borne him a son, and here he was down here in this land and was doing real good. So then he was real happy. He had a couple of sons down there by the name of Ephraim and Manasseh, and later you remember Jacob claimed these two sons. He said, "Joseph, you can have the rest of them, but I take these two sons." And he spoke of the blessing that was on the younger one of them, which was Ephraim. And you remember when the blessing came, he crossed his hands like that, and Joseph tried to change it because Jacob was kind of bad in his sight, you know, and he couldn't see too good. And he told him, he said, "No, son, I know what I'm doing." And so then he said, "A great nation will come out of Manasseh," said, "but Ephraim," said, "he'll be the one that shall be the greatest." And sure enough, when you read over there in the book of the lineage of the 12 tribes, you'll find out why he said that. But anyway, here we find that Joseph is now a great ruler down in Egypt. He's over everything down in Egypt. And everything is going well with him, and he's kind of forgot about some of his sorrows. And here the famine comes, and the Bible said it hits the land of Canaan, and Jacob and all of them begins to get hungry. Now I'll tell you, there's revelation that would take weeks to bring out concerning the life of Joseph. It would take weeks to do it. All right, but anyway, we see right here that Joseph is down here. He's ruling in Egypt, and now here Jacob is out of food, and he says to the patriarchs, the brethren of Joseph, he says, "You'll have to go down into Egypt and get corn for us. I hear there's corn down there, and you'll have to go down there and get some corn." And the Bible said that they went down there, and when they got down into Egypt, here Joseph, he recognized them. And he spoke to them through an interpreter, and they did not know that Joseph could speak their language, nor they did not know he was Joseph, but he recognized them. He began to ask if his father was all right, you know, he wanted to know if their father was well and if they had a brother and so forth, because he knew that they did have Benjamin, and that was his real brother. These were the half-brothers, but Benjamin was his real brother. And so then he was real concerned about it. And if you'll notice that when they came before Joseph, that Joseph dealt with them kind of hard. He said, "You are spies," said, "you've come to seek to see the nakedness of the land." And the Bible said that when he said this, this really grieved them. And they said, "No," said, "we're not spies." And he began to tell them that he had a younger brother and so forth. He said, "Well," said, "to prove that you're not spies, said, you go bring your younger brother to me. Let me have proof that you have a younger brother, that your story is true." And the Bible said that he said, "I'll just keep Simeon down here and put him in prison, or put him in ward until after you come back." Now, this is one reason I believe that Simeon was the one that conspired against him and said, "Let's kill him." Because Simeon was the one that was placed down there and bound and kept until the return of these men. So then they finally got some corn and then started out of Egypt. And then when they did, they discovered that the money was in their bag. Then they were really afraid. And so they went on home to Jacob and took the corn down, and then they explained everything that happened, and so it wasn't too long before the corn gave out, and they had to go back down into Egypt. Now, the man had told them, said, "There's no need for you to come back unless I see your younger brother. You won't see my face." And so then, with this report of Joseph to Jacob, then they got ready to go get corn again, and Jacob didn't know what to do. He didn't want to send Benjamin down there. He'd been bereaved of Joseph, and he didn't want to send Benjamin down there. And he told him, he said, "Why did you deal so evil with me to even tell the man you had a younger brother?" And so then they said, "Well," he straightway asked us, of our life and our manner of life and so forth, and said we had to tell the man that we did have a father, he was living, and that we had a younger brother. And so then Jacob wouldn't consent to it, but the famine got so great, something had to be done. And finally Judah, he went, notice that Judah's really popping up in every place you notice Judah pops up. Well, if you'll notice here, Judah was the one that went over here and began to talk with Jacob and plead for him to hold him responsible and let him take Benjamin down there to get some corn so their little ones could live and so they could live. Alright, now, if you notice Judah, we'll drop back here for just a few minutes. If you notice that Judah, during the time that Joseph was down in Egypt to begin with, you notice that Judah was the one that went down in the way of Timnath and had to do with his daughter-in-law. You remember we brought it out here one night? How many of you remember that? He had a son by the name of Ur and a son by the name of Onan. And the Bible said that he had a daughter-in-law by the name of Tamar. And according to the Bible, Onan was a wicked person. And Ur was a wicked person. And when Ur died, God smote him because of his wickedness. Then Onan, the Bible said, was supposed to give seed to the wife. It was according, let your brothers take your wife and so forth, you know, as the law was. And the Bible said that he spilt the seed on the ground and it displeased the Lord, and God smote him because of the wicked thing that he did. He knew the seed would not be his, but the children would be his brothers, and he was upset, so he wouldn't do it. And remember, Judah promised to give Shelah to Tamar later on when he got old enough. And the Bible said that he forgot about it, or he never did it. And so then Tamar, she put on a veil-like, went down in the way of Timnath and sat down here. And the Bible said that Judah came by the way of Timnath and went down there. And when he went down there, I guess he was going to share his sheep. When he went down there, that he found this woman, he thought she was a harlot, and he said, let me turn in unto you. And she said, what will you give me? He said, I'll give you a kid or so from the flocks. And she said, will you give me a pledge? He said, all right, what will you take? She said, your bracelet, your signet, and your staff. I'll take these three things. And the Bible said that they were given to Tamar, and then when he went back, he sent the kid down there to her. But when they got down there and they inquired about a harlot, they said, there's no harlot in this city. And the Bible said that as the time passed and Tamar was found with child, they come and said that your daughter Tamar is found with child in the act of harlotry. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burned. Now, can you imagine such a wicked way that men had back there in that day? That's pretty wicked, because if the woman did anything, they was ready to kill her. And yet the men just done most anyway back there. That was kind of wicked the way some of them did. But anyway, here he was willing to burn his daughter at the stake, that is his daughter-in-law at the stake, when he had committed such an evil act himself. And so then when the time came to burn her, she sent forth the bracelet, the signet, and the staff. She'd already contemplated this happening. She knew it would happen, so she'd already prepared for it. Now, you say, well, why do you think she did a thing like this? Because she had to have seed of that family if she got any inheritance. She was a widow, and there she was without any living or anybody to take care of her or anything. She didn't have any inheritance coming, and she was determined that she was going to have an inheritance, and she had to do it the harlotry way. And so then when she sent forth the signet and the staff and the bracelet, she sent it over there, and she said, buy the man to whom these belong, am I with child? And the Bible said that when she said this, that Judah, he said, she's more righteous than I am. Said, because I failed to give unto her Shelah. And said, he was old enough. And the Bible said that she saw that he hadn't been given to her for a husband and so forth. And this is why she did it. So he said, she's more righteous than I. Well, then there came forth twins, you remember? And the Bible teaches that the twins came forth, and the little red cord was tied around one of them's hand. It broke forth in the breach and so forth, and the nurse said, the breach be upon you. But anyway, as we go on down a little bit farther, And we find here now that this happened it was kind of an interval during the time that Joseph was down here in Egypt. Now, how many of you remember Reuben? Reuben was also bad about harlotry in the sense that he went up to his own father's bed and over there with Bilhah the handmaid, which was the handmaid, I believe, of Rachel, that he went in unto the handmaid. And the Bible said when Jacob found out that he had taken up time with his wife, that this really grieved Jacob also. And later you'll find out in the pronouncing of the blessings upon him that this was remembered, that Jacob never did forget it. Now, a lot of times we get the idea, you know, that God forgets about things. But God doesn't forget things, does he? Let's see here just a minute. Now, I have to just go strictly by what God gives me or what I understand, because I don't have nothing to go by when I'm teaching these lessons. And one thing here I wanted us to notice. Here, I believe we've got it right here at hand. And if we have, it would be good to check it here if we've got it right at hand. All right, now, Pharaoh and Zerah. Pharaoh and Zerah. That was the name of those two children that was born of Tamar. Pharaoh and Zerah. That's right. And Pharaoh was the one that got the scarlet cord. And so then we go back now and we pick up down here where we left off a few minutes ago. And remember now, we're over here at the point where they've got to take Benjamin back down into Egypt. All right, now, the Bible said that Judah said, "I'll be surety for him if you'll let him go down." There's one thing you got to admit about Judah, he had some integrity about him. You notice when Tamar proved her point that he accepted the charge. And you'll find that even in being surety for Benjamin, that he also accepted the responsibility when he's put on the spot. And he was the one also that delivered Joseph in a sense, because he said, "Let's sell him rather than kill him." So here we find that Judah does have some sense of integrity. All right, now then, we find that Jacob consented to Benjamin going down into Egypt. He said, "If I be bereaved of my son, I'll just have to be bereaved. Something has to be done. We've got to do something." All right, now here they go down into Egypt again. And when Joseph sees Benjamin, he just can't restrain himself. In other words, this is just a little bit more than he can take when he finds out that this is Benjamin. He asks him if it's Benjamin, and so he fills their sacks with corns, and then he puts money back into their sack, and he takes them in, and he has a feast, and he prepares them a big meal, and he gives I believe the Bible said he gave Benjamin about five times the mess he did the others. And so then, here they have a big feast, and the brethren, they're all confused. They don't understand it, because one minute he's charged them as being spies, the next minute he's preparing a feast for them. And so then here they are over here having a feast, and they're kind of carried away. They don't know what to do. And even though they had to have separate tables because it was an abomination to eat with the Hebrews, you know, or anybody like that, to the Egyptians, and they had to have separate tables there. But anyway, God worked the thing out in getting Benjamin down there and getting some corn. But if you'll notice, after they had this great feast, then Joseph said to the steward, said, "Take my silver cup and put it in Benjamin's bag." Put all their money back into the bag and put the silver cup in Benjamin's bag. And so then here they start off again back to Egypt. As quick as the morning light came, the Bible said that Joseph sent them on their way, not to Egypt, but going back to Jacob. And here they are going back up to Jacob, all right, back to the land of Canaan. Now, as quick as they get out a ways, the Bible said they suddenly are overtaken by the steward, or one of the men there that work under the hands of Joseph. And Joseph has sent him out there and told him to search their goods and so forth. And now they take their bags down, and the man begins to go through it, and he says, "You've stolen the silver cup by which my master divines," and so forth. One of the brethren spoke up and said, "Well, you know we wouldn't do that. So we brought the money back that we found in the bag before." Now, I want you to notice this. They had tried to be honest from the first trip. Fine. When they came back on this first trip, They had brought a present to Joseph. Jacob had told him, said, you take the money back. And the man said, I'll pray that God will give us grace in the man's sight. Said, take the money back. Said, maybe it was just an oversight. And said, when you go back down there, take him some balm and take him some honey and take him some spices. Take him some myrrh and take him some nuts and take him some almonds. And said, pick out the best fruit of the land and said, take it down there to him and give him a little gimp. And said, maybe this will pacify the man, which they did. They took down there. And then after they had their feast and they got everything straightened out over that money, now here they are with their sacks down and he's having to examine them again. All right, now the Bible said, one of the brethren said, we'd not do a wicked thing like that, steal the silver out of his house. And said, now, if it be found with either one of us, said, then you can kill the one that it's found with. And said, not only that, but the rest of us will be your bondsmen and be servants. So he said, all right, according to your words, that's the way it'll be. So then here they go through the bags, and the very one that it's found with is Benjamin. And so then, when it's found with Benjamin, all the brethren are all tore up, and so they all go back to Egypt. They go back down there, and there's nothing they can say or do, so they just finally tell the man, said, we'll all just be your bondsmen. And Joseph, he said, no, said, we won't have it that way. Now remember, he's doing all this to reprove them for their evil way that they've done him. He remembered, he's getting revenge. And so then, here it is, remember now, I say this concerning Revelation, God will not leave the Jew unpunished. Remember the time of Jacob's trouble. Now, he won't leave them unpunished for what they did to Jesus. Now, so then you find right here that the bags are gone through. They find themselves back there becoming bondsmen or offering to become bondsmen. And Joseph says that he won't have it that way. He said, I'll take this man for a bondsman. And said, the rest of you just go on back. Well, there wasn't a fix. Judah was on the spot because he had already said that I'll be surety. And so Judah could have sneaked out on that thing and those brethren could have left. But now look at the difference in Judah. They didn't leave. They didn't run off and leave. Judah had integrity because he come and fell down before the man. And he said, sir, he said, my father's home. Said he's an old man and said he's been bereaved of one of his sons. And said, now if I go back and tell him that Benjamin is a bondsman down here, he said, then he'll go down to the grave. Said his gray hair will bring him down to the grave with mourning. And he was real concerned about his father. And said, I couldn't stand to look on my father and see this. Said, so I'll just stay here. In other words, I'll be a bondsman. Well, anyway, the Bible said that after this, that it was just about more than Joseph could take. In other words, he just couldn't go any further with it. He had done punished him as much as he could. And then when Judah began to humble himself and fall down before him, well, that's just more than he could take. And so then the Bible said that he commanded that everybody just get out of the building. And all of them left except his brethren, and then he began to weep. He began to cry, and he fell on Benjamin's neck, and he began to weep and cry over his brother and carry on, and the brethren was more confused now. They were more confused than ever. And Joseph was just broke all to pieces, and here the same man was that was calling them spies and putting them in prison. Now here he was crying over them. I guess they must have thought he'd lost his mind or something. But anyway, it was real confusing to them, and they just didn't know what to do. But he revealed himself unto them, and he told them, said, I'm your brother Joseph. And said, even though you did all of these things and intended these things for evil to me, he said, God has turned them out to be good. Said, it was the hand of God that sent me on to preserve life and to preserve your posterity in the earth. And so then you find here that the brethren are all tore up, and they had already said one to another every time something happened, they'd say, yeah, this is because we done Joseph like that. They'd say, God's requiring his blood at our hand. And every time something evil would happen, they'd say, this is because we done Joseph like we did. And they were pretty well punished and reminded of their evil. So then we find here that Joseph, he told them, I'm your very brother Joseph. Well, they couldn't hardly believe it, but finally he convinced them. And then they saw the dream. He said, this was the dream. In other words, they were bound down to him, and it was just exactly according to the dreams that he had had. And so then the Bible said that he sent 10 she-asses loaded with good things, 10 asses loaded with good things and 10 she-asses with bread and wine and with corn out of Egypt up to Jacob. and said, go tell Jacob, my father, said, tell him to come down here into Egypt and not to regard anything that he's got. In other words, just forget about his riches and his treasures back there, because all of Egypt will belong to him. All the goods of Egypt will belong to him. And so he sent up there 10 she-asses and 10 more asses, and on these he had laden with the good things. 10 of them laden with the good things of Egypt, as proof that it was Joseph that was sending for him, and also 10 of them with corn and with wine, and with flour and so forth, bread, as the Bible said, bread, there that he might be sustained on his journey coming down from Egypt. And he also sent wagons to bring the little folks back in. And according to the Bible, they went up, and as they started to leave, Joseph gave them a change of raiment, but the Bible said he gave Benjamin 5 changes of raiment. And so then they went up to their father, and when they told their father this, the Bible said his heart fainted. He just couldn't believe it. His heart fainted. His strength just left him. It was too much of a shock for an old man after that he had went this number of years. I don't know just how many years, but it must have been pretty far along in the famine. It had been about 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 years or something. And so here he was up there. They were up there telling Jacob that his son Joseph was alive, and the Bible said his heart fainted within him. And then when he saw all the good things and the treasures that had been sent, he accepted it and he recovered, and the Bible said he made ready to go down into Egypt. Now, when he went down into Egypt, there were 70 people of his people that went down there, just his people. 70 of them. And I want you to really remember this little part in here. We won't be long. We'll be closing. But really remember this little part in here now, because there's some things in here that when you get over there where the plagues hit Egypt, you'll find out. Yet you'll remember some things back there that'll tie in. You'll be glad you know. All right, now then, here he is down here going down to Egypt. And the Lord comes to him in a vision again and speaks to him. Tells him how he'll multiply him and so forth. And here he goes down into Egypt. He said, the Lord come to him in a vision and said, go on down, Jacob, and I'll be with you in Egypt. All right, here he goes down in Egypt. Now, the Bible said when Pharaoh and the people heard that the brethren of Joseph come, that they were very delighted. This was a good man. Pharaoh was a good man. Remember, all of them took the title of Pharaoh. Pharaoh was a title in that day, and every man that come to the throne was a Pharaoh, just like we call him a president today. But anyway, here he went on down, and the Bible said that Joseph went out to meet his father and fell on his neck and wept a long time over his father. And his father said, now that my eyes have seen you, Joseph, said, I'm ready to die. Now, that must have been some reunion. I'd like to have been back there and saw that. When Joseph got close to his father after all those years, I just left to have been there and saw that. But anyway, it was a great family reunion. And so then, according to the Bible, he went on down to Egypt, and Joseph took Jacob over there to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh talked real kind to him, and Pharaoh wanted to know his age, and he told him his age, and then he said, Jacob began to tell him his years had been few and full of sorrow and heartaches and so forth, and here he blessed Pharaoh, and Pharaoh, Jacob told him, said, I'm a sheep herder. And they wanted to go into the land of Goshen. So there's a famine in Canaan. We can't find place for our flocks to feed, and we want to come into Egypt. And he said, all right. He said, go to the land of Goshen. Now remember, I mentioned the other night that sheep herders were an abomination to the Egyptians. And so then Joseph had instructed them to ask for the land of Goshen, and you'll find out later why. But anyway, to ask for the land of Goshen. And so then here in the land of Goshen they went. Pharaoh said, pick out the very best places for your father. And if there's any men among you that are great men of understanding, put them over my cattle. And so then here we find that they're well entreated. Now, after they're down there, Joseph makes them our rulers over certain things. And they really begin to live good. Everything is well with them. And the brethren are happy. Their children are happy. And they're sorry for all they've done. And here, the Bible said everything's going along real good, and about 14 years passes by. They have a real good time down in Egypt. Everything's well under the hand of this Pharaoh. Now, but remember, God said, thy seed shall sojourn in bondage 400 years. And here they're having a good time. Now, it don't sound like much bondage down there. It sounds like the word of the Lord isn't true. But if you'll notice, you'll find out later that these brethren didn't just pay for their sins there of what they did to Joseph and the instruments of cruelty and what they did to those people up there. You'll find out at Hamor and them, the things they did to Hamor, they paid for these things when that bondage come on them and their children down there later. And so then you find here that Joseph being in rule and all being well, that they're getting along real good. Now, and as the famine continues on, the Bible said the people come to Joseph, and they come to Pharaoh, and they said, we've got to have something to eat. And Pharaoh said, go to Joseph, and whatever Joseph tells you, that's what it'll be. So they came to Joseph, and Joseph used, he told him, he said, you bring me money. So they brought money until everybody in all the land had spent their money. There wasn't no money left. Everything come to Joseph. And so then, the Bible said as they continued on, the famine continued on, they come to Joseph, they said, we don't have any more money. Said, all of our money's gone. Said, Joseph, you're going to have to do something to keep the people alive, or said, everybody in the whole country will die. And said, you don't want all the people of the land to die. And so Joseph said, bring me your cattle. And so here they begin to bring their cattle to Joseph. And then after this, Joseph took all their cattle, all their sheep, everything that they had. And then finally they said, we'll not hide it from thee, our Lord. Said, all of our cattle is gone, and all our money is gone. And said, we're still in need of food. And so then Joseph said, all right. Said, then I'll take your land. And said, after this, said, they said, we'll just be servants to Pharaoh. He said, I'll take your land. And said, I'll appoint you a portion and all the way across Egypt. The Bible said, from one boundary of Egypt to another, he spread them abroad and set up farms and different things and said, now I'll give you so much seed to sow, and you serve Pharaoh, and you give a field. In other words, a field of everything that you get. And the Bible said until this day it remained the same. That there was to give a field, and there they served Pharaoh, and Joseph took all the money to Pharaoh. Now, so then you see here, now I want you to get a beautiful picture here. Look at the contrast of this great thing. From the time Joseph comes down to Egypt, God starts blessing. And there's a continual stream of blessing until finally Pharaoh is the ruler of all the country. But anyway, now here we are down in Egypt. Joseph has taken all of them for bondsmen, and here they are. Pharaoh's got all the money. All the money is down in Egypt. All right? Now look at it. Here the children of Israel are treated well. It was said, now notice the thing that he said. He said, they that bless you, I will bless them. They that curse you, I will curse them. This was what he told them. This is the way it would be. Now I'll bless them that bless you, I'll curse them that curse you. And here you are, you see, Abraham's seed down here, and Pharaoh is blessing them, and look what God's doing for Pharaoh. But now notice tomorrow, the Lord willing, when we just take one step over and this Pharaoh dies that knows Joseph, and another Pharaoh comes up, and then look what kind of condition Egypt's in when we get through tomorrow, if the good Lord's will. But notice now how he's blessing. Remember, God has blessed America because she's been good to the Jews, because she's entreated religion well. But now she's becoming a hater of religion. And you say, I know, I'm going to try to stay out of Revelation, but hey, you just watch now, things is going to happen. But anyway, we'll get back to the story here. All right, now I've been down in Egypt. I have to admit that thing pulls a little bit. But down in Egypt, now here it is, all of them are bondsmen, and Joseph is what you might say king over everything. He's like Christ, he's second to God. Anyway, here he is. And 14 years, about 14 years goes by. We're going to try to close. I said that way a while ago, but we are. About 14 years goes by. And then the report comes that your father is ill. And the Bible said that Joseph goes over to his father. When Jacob finds out that Joseph is coming, then he takes courage. Remember now, he's over in the land of Goshen. And Joseph has to be over there in the place where he rules at. All right? He comes over, and when he comes over, Jacob sees him. Jacob begins to talk with him, and they have a conversation. God has let him spend about 14 years with his father. All right, now then the time of his departure is at hand. And so then we find that Jacob here, and he begins to bless. Now he begins to bless all of the children. Now we might can find this right quickly here. I don't have it. Probably could relate it to you. I remember it fairly well. But just to have this right here, we can turn right over here to the blessings of Jacob in the 48th chapter. It came to pass these things that one told Joseph, "Behold, thy father is sick." Now he went down there and he took his two sons with him, Manasseh and Ephraim. And when he got down there, remember, when he got down there, that the father was in a dying condition. He was sick, ready to yield up the ghost, and he re-strengthened himself, and he brought the sons close, and he claimed the sons. Now he claimed the sons. He laid his hands on the sons. He crossed his hand like this. And the Bible said he blessed Ephraim, and he blessed Manasseh. But at the same time, he said that the younger shall be greater. The younger shall be greater. All right, now you can see this here that the blessing is resting on the younger. Always the younger. Did you notice that? There was Cain and Abel. And then it was Abel who the blessing was on. Then comes Esau and Jacob. And it was Jacob. And over there, Phares and Zerah. It was the same way with them. As far as I could tell, it was the younger. And on down it came the younger, always the younger. And you say, well, how could that be? Well, it was God's way of doing it. Now you say, well, according to the Bible, the firstborn was the one that God always asked for as he set up the law over there, that he hallowed the firstborn. And Jesus was his firstborn, and he spoke of Israel being his firstborn. And that's true. But he's trying to, well, we get back just a touch of revelation there if we don't watch out. But anyway, that has to do with the flesh and the spirit. I wasn't going to bring it out. But anyway, here we're in the 48th chapter of the book of Genesis, and we are dealing with Manasseh and with Ephraim. Okay, now, notice here that in the 48th chapter, now he is ready to die. His eyes have waxed dim. And Joseph has enjoyed himself with his father, and I'm sure that in that 14 years or whatever it was, they had a wonderful time. But now comes the time of the departure, and here you'll find in the 49th chapter that he is going to bless them. And we want to be sure to get these blessings right, because we're going to close tonight with these blessings. And I want you to hear real good now what he has to say to these. Remember, he went down into Egypt. There were 70 souls with him. Outside of his children, that is Joseph and his family down there. There were 70 of them, and God had blessed him, and now here he is dying in a good old age at 147 years old. All right, now, Joseph lived after this to be 110 years old, and after that he also passed away. Yeah, we got that on the board. Ammon died at 137, which was Moses' father, and Joseph at 110. All right, now, I believe Ishmael died at 137 also. I believe I brought that out the other night. Sarah died at 127. However, you find the continuity there, 127 for Sarah, if you want to try to remember it. 127 for Sarah, 137 for Ishmael, and then 147 for Jacob. It's just 10 years difference each one. It'll help you remember it that way. And then, of course, Joseph at 110 years old. But anyway, how many remember Terah? He died at 205, you remember? All right. Let's go on over a little further. Isaac at 180. Now, let's get these right here in the 49th chapter of the book of Genesis. We want to get these. This is the last part. Usually we don't refer back to the Bible. We just go on by inspiration. But here we want to be sure that we have these straight, because these is important. This has to do with all of Israel and what happens to them. And here Jacob, being a prophet of his day, having the mind of God and knowing these things, I want you to notice the way that he brings forth these blessings. It says here, and Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Gather yourselves together and hear, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Now notice, Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water. You notice what he said there about Reuben? Unstable as water. Thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it. He went up to my couch. Now you'd think Jacob had done forgot about that when he went to bless him, but he didn't forget about it, did he? He remembered that thing. And here, now you say, Jacob remembered it. It's really God remembering it. God remembered those things. So he remembers the good and the bad that we do. And here he is remembering this way down here in the time of the blessing. And he says that Reuben is the firstborn, but he's unstable as water. And he said, you defile my couch. Went up to Bilhah, remember now, which was the handmaid of Rachel, and defiled the couch thereof. That woman I'm not sure. I didn't know just how many children that all of them bore. And I probably could bring some of it out tonight, but I don't want to do it and try to crowd in here. But I believe it was about 6 or 7 children that she bore. Zillah, I believe, was about 16 children. But anyway, here he defiled his father's couch. Now that's the blessing that is pronounced upon him. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it. He went up to my couch. Now listen to Simeon. Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitation. See, God didn't forget what they did either. All right, listen. O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly, mine honor, be not thou united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. All right, you hear the blessing on them. God didn't forget what they did to Hamor and his son over there, and how they took advantage of those men in the time of circumcision. I brought it out the other night. 3 days of circumcision, and they pounced upon them when they couldn't help themselves because they defiled Dinah the daughter, and the man was willing to make it right because he come over there and said, ask me as much dowry as you will, the father did. Said, ask me anything. Said, my son's in love with your daughter. And said, ask me anything. And said, we'll do anything. And they asked him to be circumcised according to the plan of God, and they were willing to do it. And then these men did what they did in killing him when they were helpless. All right, he called them instruments of cruelty, said he would scatter them in Israel. All right, are you noticing in that now, what he's saying here? All right, then he says here, notice now, that was Judah. That was Judah that was unstable as water. Now he's dealing with Simeon and Levi. Simeon and Levi. Remember, from Levi come forth the priesthood. Don't forget that now. From Levi come forth the priesthood. All right, now then you find here the next one is Judah. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Now I want you to keep these in order for this reason. This is the fourth one, and when we mentioned the Urim Thummim the other day, over there were the stones which their name was upon each stone coming down the line. Remember, if you can remember the order of these sons coming down the line, then you'll find out that in so doing that you'll have what kind of birthstone they have. And this will be helpful to you. All right, now notice we've mentioned Reuben, who was the firstborn unstable. And then we mentioned Simeon and Levi, which was the instruments of cruelty. That made 3 of them, and this is the fourth, and Judah. Thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. All right, notice that now. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. You see that blessing? Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion. And as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? All right, now notice right here, and coming to a close here in just a little bit, notice that the blessings that he placed on these, they sound like animals. When we get to the book of Revelation, the ones that was around that throne, remember, was animals, and they're symbolized by these tribes that was around the tabernacle in the wilderness. And notice the blessings of them here. It says here, Judah is a lion's whip, from the prey my son thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, as an old lion, who shall rouse him up. The sceptre shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Alright. Notice this. Binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass's coat under the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. Okay? Now, if you notice, that has to do with the prophecy of Jesus. Now, I wished I had thought and brought this out a little further back concerning some of the prophecy. I didn't relate it. But how many remember back there when Jacob was down in the land of Laban watching after his father's flocks down there? He brought out something to his father-in-law. What named his father-in-law's flock? He brought out something to his father-in-law where he said that whatever was torn by night you required of me. And he spoke to him and told him how the frost was upon him by night and the heat by day and so forth. It was prophecy. I should have brought it out. Read it when you get a chance. He's just telling his complaints to his father-in-law, how that he'd been just to him and his father-in-law had been unjust, but it was really prophecy of Jesus. If you don't believe it, read it over there. And here are some more things here that pertains to Jesus. These men being anointed by the Spirit, just like you are, sometime in your day, during your time, you speak and you don't realize it, but it's the Holy Spirit speaking his prophecy. Someday that thing will come to pass. You don't know anything about it a lot of times. But see, his vesture dipped in blood. You can see it here by the grapes, in the blood of the grapes. His teeth shall be red. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. All right, now, this is the prophecy of Judah. And remember, from out of this came Christ, because from this comes Joseph, who was born, who married Mary. All right, the credit goes to the man. Really, it was the woman that bore the son, but it runs through the man's lineage. All right, now let's take Zebulun. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea. Some pronounce this as Zebulun. Haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his brother shall be unto Sidon. I don't remember where you remember some things Jesus said over there about the coast there, and some would be desolate and so forth by the sea. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his borders shall be unto Zidon. Now you watch these things, and they come to pass just like he said them. All right, the next one is Issachar. Issachar is a strong ass couching down between two burdens. And he saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulders to bear, and became a servant unto tribute. All right? Now, you notice that we're dealing majorly here with Lear's sons. Have you noticed that? Dealing with Lear's sons. Now, I want you to notice something when we get through with these blessings. I want you to notice something. Now, we're dealing with Lear's son, but now watch. Now, we're fixing to deal with Bilhah's son and Zilla's sons. Notice here the handmaid's sons. All right, let's deal with Bilhah. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. I don't believe there's but one person that was born to Dan. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path that biteth the horse heel, so that his rider shall fall backwards. I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. Now, if you notice that Dan was the one that was left out of the tribes over there when you read it in the book of Revelation. He's likened unto a serpent. That's the reason I believe God left him out over there. And so then here, he shall be a serpent. He don't say he'll be likened a serpent. He said, Dan shall be a serpent. And so then he's left out of the blessings of the tribes over there. And I believe you'll find out as you check it that God replaced him. Jacob claimed the sons of Joseph. You'll find them over there. All right. He says here, said, now, dealing with Gad, Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Out of Asher, his bread shall be fat. Now, he shall yield royal dainties. This is two of them. Notice now, Gad is one. Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. You remember when he was born that his mother said, a troop cometh. You remember that? Bela and Zillah. Zillah said, a troop coming. All right, and it was about a troop because then he's about 16 born. Out of Asher, his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Must have been something kingly about then. All right, Naphtali is a hind let loose. He giveth goodly words. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. That makes you to wonder, don't it? Even by the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitor. Unto the uttermost bound of the everlasting hills they shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separated from his brethren. Benjamin shall ravine as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Now you see them Jews coming in that's in the latter times, and you can tell why some of these, they say you pair of shoes, they get money out of you one way or another. All right, but notice what it says here. He shall divide the spoil. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. Now this was the blessing that God placed on them. All right, now, I hope you got that down right. I want you to notice the Bible said from Joseph, here would be the stone and the shepherd. Here would be the shepherd, the stone of Israel. From Joseph would come. Now, the Bible speaks of Jesus and says, Jesus come forth from the tribe of Judah, of which nothing of the priesthood was spoke. Now, I want to bring out just a thought here. Notice that Jacob always loved Rachel. I'm going to show you that the flesh don't always know what God's doing. Did you notice that Judah come from Leah? Did you notice that? The fourth child of Leah. Alright, even the numbers don't sound right, does it? But anyway, if you'll notice now, it come from Leah, Judah. Alright, the Bible said that Jacob died at 147. His children took him. Jacob said, now Joseph promised me that when I die, that you'll take me back over to the land of where my father purchased for a piece of money from the Hittite. Over here, the place that's called Machpelah, the cave of Machpelah. That you'll take me back there where Isaac and Rachel is buried, Abraham and Sarah is buried, he said, and where I also buried Leah. All right, now, you say, well, why didn't you go over there and be buried with Rachel? But you see, God has a way of doing things. Now, he knows what is to be done. You see the difference? In other words, he said, where I also buried Leah. So you find out that here, Leah was accounted with the Jews, but Rachel is accounted with the Gentile bride. So then Abraham being accounted father of the Jews, here Leah goes to her proper place by or with the Jews. Rachel comes over here and is buried where there's Bethlehem because it's the house of bread and this is where the sons come forth. So then, as we say, Rachel mourning for her children and would not be coveted, for they were not in the time when Herod tried to kill them. And we'll get a picture of it tomorrow, the Lord being willing, at the time when they tried to slay Moses down in Egypt. Now this just about brings us to a close with the exceptions of just one or two things. They crossed over Jordan. They went to this place, and the Bible said they sent great, there was a great body of people that went up out of Egypt to mourn over Jacob. They went up there to mourn over Jacob. And the Bible said it was such a mourning for 40 days. There was such a mourning that at this time, yeah, I'd like for you to jot that 40 days down because there's a significance to that. All right, for 40 days they mourned. And at this time of the mourning it was so great that the Amorites and Hittites and different ones around said this must be a terrible thing for the Egyptians that they would mourn like this. It was a terrible loss. And here at the cave of Machpelah that Abraham had purchased from one of the Hittites, here in this land he buried his dead. And you see that the great mourning took place. They crossed over Jordan. The great mourning took place. They had embalmed the father. They took him there to bury him. And now I want you to notice one thing. For 40 days, 40 days. Now, they had a custom that they mourned 40 days. Now, here's what I believe about it. I state this because we're coming to the close here. Remember, there was 40 years in the wilderness. 40 years in the wilderness. All right, that was a time of mourning, wasn't it, for the children of Israel? It was a mourning unto death, wasn't it? Because they never did come out of the wilderness. Their children come out. All right, Jesus was 40 days in the wilderness, a day to a year. Is that right? Now, the Bible speaks of fasting as being mourning. Them that are afflicted, let them mourn among them. All right? Now, I believe the significance of the 40 days of mourning was the same thing with Jesus' fasting, that it indicated that the flesh was now dead. After 40 days, and I believe I can prove that scientifically, because scientists say that after 40 days, starvation sets in. So then the death of the man is there after 40 days. He's dead. Now, he might live on, but physically, inwardly, everything, inspirationally, he is dead. He is dead. All right. After 40 days, according to the Bible, Jesus came out of the wilderness, but he had spent 40 days of mourning. All right. Now, I want to point out something here as we go to close. And if anybody's restless and want to leave, I felt a little something I didn't entreat too well just a minute ago. But if you want to leave, you can go ahead and leave because you don't have to stay. But we've just got 2 or 3 minutes here. I felt a wonderful spirit all the way through these teachings every night in every one of you. And it's just a little casual thing. But all right, now then, remember 40 days and a man is dead. He's dead. He's gone. All right, 40 days. Notice that when you die, you've heard me speak of it, you die, they embalm you, they take the blood out of you, which is a corruptible temporal life. They place within you embalming fluid, which is a symbol of the Holy Spirit. Power of preservation. They put you in a coffin or in a casket. In a coffin or in a casket, which is a symbol of a beautiful mansion. They put you in there. It's a beautiful thing. Now you say, Brother Pike, I don't see how that could be a symbol of a beautiful mansion. Well, that's because you think about the horror of it. But it's a symbol of paradise because you're in rest, perfect peace. All right, now, another thing, if you'll notice, just go take a few minutes, but if you'll notice, look at the Ark of the Covenant. We'll bring this out tomorrow. Look at the Ark of the Covenant, and you'll find that in the Ark of the Covenant, the cherubs this way, the border around this way that we'll get into tomorrow, on the edges they had rings on it, and then they had the shittim wood overlaid with gold that went through the rings. Now, if men went to pick that up on each side, what would it remind you of? If something was inside of it, too. Alright, so you see what I'm speaking of. But you cross over Jordan. See death. You cross over Jordan. They cross Jordan, they begin to mourn. When you die, Jesus, 40 days, he crossed over. So then when you speak of these things, you're fasting, or you die, they put you in a casket, and you cross over. You understand what I mean? Going to paradise. So then we see the significance, I believe, of why Jesus was 40 days in the wilderness the way he was. All right. Now, let's stand together, if you will.